there, Hoops fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of NBA Takedown. Coming at you on a lovely Friday morning. It is an earlier Friday show than usual. I mentioned this on Wednesday. I promised my wife a proper anniversary weekend. And so we're recording, and then I have things to do with my wife. I said, hun, I would skip the show, but there's only one person who could possibly ever come between us in even the slightest of ways. He is just a very special human being. And I can never pass up the opportunity to talk to him. So, Fred,
unfortunately, Elton John couldn't be here today.
You know why I love you, Fred? Fred Katz of The Athletic. Hi. Hi. Why I love you is there are quite literally a universe of names of people that you could have picked out to make that joke with, and you somehow found the funniest one. How do you do it? I literally don't know. I don't know how you do it.
I don't either. I don't know the secret. I think the secret is it's pretty easy to make you laugh. I think that's the secret.
If you know my sense of humor, and you, I don't know that I would say you have the same sense of humor as me. It's not that different, though. It's similar enough.
It's similar enough.
Yeah.
It's similar enough.
I'm about
most others.
Yeah. I'm about to celebrate my 11-year wedding anniversary. How many years have you been married to your better half?
Not 11.
Well, I figured as much.
11's a long time, man. That's a good accomplishment.
I don't look at it as an accomplishment. I mean, look. You don't have kids, so you obviously wouldn't know anything about this. But when you have children, one might say marriage gets a little bit tougher. So, yeah, I guess in that sense, it is something of an accomplishment.
There you go.
Yeah.
Marriage, you have a wife, you have kids. That's a real thing. Congratulations.
It's the only real thing I have.
You're an adult. You're an adult. He did it.
We did it, Joe. All right. We don't have a lot of time today, so we are going to get right to it, starting with the takeoff.
2-1-0 ignition. Liftoff.
All right. Slightly different takeoff today. I'm just going to ask you a question, and then we're going to go pick our Eastern Conference All-Stars. Your buddy, Zach Lowe, had Howard Beck on his pod yesterday, and Zach made an offhanded joke that maybe we should combine the rosters of the Knicks and the Magic, and then have that team face the Thunder in the Cup final, and it might be a more competitive game. And it made me think, like, hey, instead of like asking you a generic question to preview Knicks Magic tonight, let me just ask you this. If you had to combine the rosters of the Knicks and the Magic to face the Thunder in the Cup final, I want to know your starting five.
Okay. So if I'm facing the Thunder,
yes,
what I need to do to even just not get blown out in the first quarter.
You're trying to keep the score within 15 for as long as possible. That's your goal.
Right. So the first like 4 minutes of the game.
This is so sad, but continue.
I mean,
I can't argue with you.
Phoenix lost by 49 to the Thunder on Tuesday night.
I watched.
And I wasn't disappointed in them at all.
It's like being disappointed in your 3-year-old for losing a pickup basketball game to like
Michael Jordan. like prime Michael Jordan. That's what it's like. Okay, I have this in my weekly notebook, which I think should be up by now.
Have you stopped writing all week? I was gonna wait to blow a little smoke up your ass until later, but you had the piece of the year. I could just say it because it is the piece of the year on offensive rebounding. You had your Heat, I'm gonna call it your Heat death knell piece from last week because they haven't won a game since you put it out.
Totally.
I'm sure they appreciate you. And now you had a notebook up too? What the hell, man?
Yeah, notebook every Friday. And in my notebook, so last week I did a thing on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander having the best percentage on step back threes in the NBA so far this year, which is crazy.
It's insane.
I did a little follow up on it today, and I never do the same team in back to back weeks. for the Notebook because I just find it redundant and I like to spread things out. And the Thunder are just breaking all rules. So I did another Thunder thing and I was like, I just need to follow up on this. It's not just that Shea is hitting all these step backs. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is hitting 52% of his jumpers this year.
Yes.
In his last 12 games, Shea is shooting 65% from three. Shea is hitting 52% of his jumpers. Since Second Spectrum started tracking that in 2013, the record for highest percentage on jump shots in a single season is for a qualifying jump shooter is 49.9%. Can you guess who would have that record? It's not a trick question. It's not a trick question. No, who would be the other guy to guess?
Kevin just Durant? Insane.
Yeah, Kevin Durant.
Okay, great.
Kevin Durant in 2022-23 shot 49.9%. Right now, Shea's at 52. So Shea might be having the best jump shooting season, at least since Second Spectrum started tracking this number. It's just obscene what they're doing. Okay, so what I need is I need a team that is just going to limit turnovers like crazy. I need, because the Thunder are just going to run off of turnovers, I need a team that is going to be ultra physical defending screens.
You also need a team who could make some tough shots because the Thunder's defense are not going to allow you to do any of your shit. So at the end of the day, you just need shot makers.
So I have to choose. And in their last 12 games, the Thunder as a team are shooting 44% from three.
Seems good. So you need probably an all defense caliber player or two if you could afford one. By the way, this would be a more interesting conversation. Let me ask you, I'll leave it up to you. If you, even though we can't play in the game, if you want to include Franz in the discussion, I will allow you to include Franz in the discussion.
Oh, I thought that was a given.
Oh, okay. Fine. Great.
To be clear, we're talking about two of the three or four best teams in the Eastern Conference. Three of the four best teams in the Eastern Conference. Maybe three.
I think based on how they are playing right now, they are undoubtedly two of the three best teams in the Eastern Conference, whether they are two of the
And if we combine them, I would still pretty heavily take the Thunder. Okay, so you can only choose one of Brunson or Cat. You basically can't have one-way players. And so you can only choose one of Brunson or Cat. You know,
I'm writing down my team, by the way, as you're doing this.
I think I'll go Brunson. You need Bridges. You need Ananobi. Are we doing just a starting five or are we doing like a rotation?
We're limited on time, so I just want to do the starting five. By the way, I have written down Brunson, OG, Bridges, Franz. I think those are the easy four. And I think the fifth spot gets tricky.
Okay, Brunson, OG, Bridges, Franz.
You don't need to start it's up to you. You don't need to start a nominal center.
Right. You don't need to start Wendell Carter. You don't need to start Cat. You can start Paolo Banchero.
And yet I don't know if that's...
I don't know if that's the guy.
You know what I do? Look, we're talking. You just built it up with your referencing your column and a player that's doing things that have never been done before and a team that's doing things that have never been done before. Like, you're going to get killed probably either way. Just go outside the box. Make Bane the fifth starter.
Right. You could do that. Start small. And then the problem is, the Thunder might go two bigs against you and go Chet and Holmgren, but they're not a very good defensive rebounding team anyway.
They don't have Isaiah but if we're doing Franz is available.
I thought we were doing Franz.
Okay. So then I guess in this theoretical world, I would take my chance. Personally, I would take my chances on the glass with the five that we just said.
Me too. And assume you could just have it be a wash. Yeah, I think that's right. I think you just kind of have to go with the best players. It gives you the extra ball handler. And then you go Brunson, you go Bane.
Yeah.
You go OG, Franz, and Bridges. That does sound crazy, though. Like, I don't know if that, I mean, I don't think that team would really stand much of a chance either. Like, that's tough.
Great. Which team would stand about? It's
I mean, maybe like, even though, no, it doesn't make sense. I don't think.
Whoa, what were you going to say? Play it out. Come on.
I don't think there's a way to get Jalen Suggs in there. I'm trying to think if there's a way to get Jalen Suggs in there, because I'm like, Jalen Suggs, his elite skill is getting people to break their composure. That's his elite skill. And I say that, I don't say that ironically. That is
his
and it is an elite skill.
What is he shooting this year? I don't trust him as a shooter anyway. I'm just curious. I don't know off the top of my head. I'll look it up.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of need shooting everywhere, especially if you're going to have Franz out there.
Man, 33%. I just can't trust him.
I don't think there's a way to get Suggs in there. Maybe that is the way to do it. And then you play. The thing is, you don't want to play really fast, but like, a Brunson team is just not going to play really fast.
I was going to say the Galaxy brain thing, and I, to be very clear, because obviously I would not, as a Knicks fan and someone who does largely Knicks content, I would not actually suggest doing this. You could take Brunson off the court, put the offense in Franz's hands and Bane to a lesser extent, and then just do Franz, Bane, and either the three Knicks wings or OG, Bridges, and I guess in that case, Suggs. I would not do that, but that would be one.
Yeah. I mean, you could try to splice Mitchell Robinson in there, but I don't think so. Too limited.
Not the way he's playing right now. And
yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. This was fun. I look forward to talking about the Thunder more with you as the season goes on, both on this show and on Knicks Film School at some point, because if that's the collision course that might be there at the end of the tunnel, it's worth our conversation. Let's talk about the East All-Stars. It's early. It's not even a third of the way through the season, but I thought it would be a good time and a fun exercise, especially since the East is in an interesting place right now, where there are some teams that are better than we thought they were going to be. There are some teams that are not performing as well as we thought they were going to be. There's some teams that are kind of in between, have had good parts of the season, not so good parts of the season. I will just ask you before we start going through the list, because I know you did a little bit of prep for this, was this exercise a little bit easier or harder than you thought it might be?
Way easier than I thought it would be.
Same answer. Yep.
I totally feel good about my 12, but like in a weird way where like you could have somebody or two guys who I don't have. And there are some years where I feel like you could have two guys who I don't have. And I'd be like, damn, that makes this hard. But for some reason, I just don't really care enough about those guys to where I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's fine. It's a pretty easy decision to make. I kind of feel like it comes out pretty intuitively, and I felt like there were eight guys who I was like, oh, 100% not even debatable. And
that was my next question, is how many locks did you have? So you had eight?
Yeah, maybe nine.
I had nine.
Probably nine, I guess.
I did not have Dean Wade. Just gonna put
that right. Oh, so I had 10. I had 10.
You know what would be funny is if let's say LeBron did not get like voted in or selected by the coaches, and then the commissioner was like, did the I was about to say Dean Wade, the Dwayne Wade Dirk thing, and like, but needed to do equally for both conferences. It was like, LeBron, you will be a honorary Western Conference All-Star, and since we need someone from the East, Dean Wade, congratulations. Same last name as the last time they did it. So
exactly.
Makes sense. All right, let's just start. I had nine locks. I'm going to ask, you said you had eight or nine that you were like no-brainers, right?
Yeah, I guess I had nine.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to read off your nine, and after you say each name, I'm just going to say whether or not I had that player as a lock.
Okay. Tyrese Maxey.
Yes.
Donovan Mitchell.
Yes.
Jaylen Brown.
Yes.
So many Jaylens, by the way.
There are a lot of Jaylens.
I feel like I need to do a story on how like it's all Jaylens now. And I need to talk to Jalen Rose, whose mother came up with the name Jaylen, which is just an incredible fact. It always blows my mind.
Well, I've heard this before and I forget all about it.
Jalen Rose's mother. Jalen Rose is the first Jalen
ever of any spelling.
Yeah, Jalen Rose, his mother came up with it because his uncle's name was Leonard, and his father's name was Jason, something with a J.
Okay, Jalen. Oh yeah, wow.
And so he combined.
There it is.
Combined the two, and came up with Jalen. If you look at the history of Jalen's, there are no Jalen's until the early 90s when Fab Five pops up and Jalen Rose becomes a sensation. And then there start to be a bunch of Jalen's.
That's a great name.
And now everyone is named Jalen
with different spellings.
Now everyone is named Jalen with a million different spellings. And, every all-star is apparently Jalen too. All right. So Maxi, Mitchell, Jalen Brown.
Yep.
Not our last Jalen. No. Giannis.
I looked up. So we did the West all-stars on Wednesday and we left, at my urging, I left Wemby off. Cause I was like,
right. That's fine. He's played 12 games,
12 games. Giannis has played 17. So I had him as a lock too. So I won't give you an issue there.
Yep. Yeah. I'm just doing it as if the game were played now because we don't know what's going to happen.
This is our all-stars through today based on what you have done thus far this season. Correct.
Jalen number two, Jalen Brunson.
Yeah. Correct. I have him too.
Cade Cunningham.
Yep.
This is in no particular order. Actually, this is in order of the scoring leaders because that's how I went through it.
Well, what I'll do after this is we'll start filling in the actual positions because we do have to have a legitimate all-star team within the rules of the.
But aren't there no more positions in all-star?
Well, that's all NBA.
No, but there's also no positions in all-star now. They changed it for this year.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, they changed it. But I don't blame me for not knowing because nobody knows this. Nobody knows the all-star rules anymore.
We hemmed and hawed. Emphasis on the hawed. And ultimately, at my urging, went with Julius Randle as the 12th West All-Star, as opposed to, I think, who do we leave off? I left off like Jamal Murray because I was going with the positions. And you're telling me now it's no positions? This is fucked.
No positions.
All right.
No positions.
I give up.
No positions.
Okay.
Cade Cunningham is number six.
Yeah.
Another Jalen. Jalen Johnson's number seven.
We're seven for seven.
Another injury thing, which is just like he has played enough so far and he's a lock for me, is Franz Wagner.
We are eight for eight. And this is interesting because I'm curious if we have the same quasi final lock.
Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, we both had a center on a top two team in the East as our final lock. I did
Jalen
not.
Duren. Jalen Duren.
So here was the tiebreaker for me. I wrote the name down.
By the way, yeah. Can I just say, Duren's literally the next guy on my list.
Okay. Like, so we're quibbling here, although I want to get back to Towns. The tiebreaker for me for Duren was that the Pistons are, and I checked this number a few weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, that's going to come down. It hasn't come down. They're 17.5 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court, according in cleaning the glass. That's in the 97th percentile league-wide. He's shooting 65% from the field. I think he's like third or something in the league in rebounds. He's having an insane season. Okay. So
offensively, you know who he looks like offensively now?
Who?
He looks like Magic Dwight Howard offensively.
That's right. 3 inches shorter, but yeah.
But with that
or 2 inches
body tight and like the dude is so strong and so big. So athletic, his ability to throw down lobs, his ability to offensive rebound. I'm not saying that he is the equivalent player of Magic Dwight Howard because Magic Dwight Howard was one of the all-time greatest defenders, a four-time defensive player of the year, which, yep, by the way, Duren's gotten way better at, but he's obviously nowhere near Dwight Howard. But offensively, he looks kind of like that guy. He is starting to create more for himself. He's an underrated passer. He's good at creating out of the short roll. Him and Cade Cunningham have done a really good job on those plays so far this year. Jalen Duren has been another Jalen. I can't even say he's been a top three Jalen, but he's been.
It's too many.
He's been the fourth best Jalen in the Eastern Conference this year, which is actually Doesn't sound like an amazing compliment, but it really is, because four of the top 10 guys on my list are Jalen's.
He would be an all first team Jalen. Well, actually, would he be an all first team Jalen in the NBA? Because J-Dub.
Right.
Is there another Jalen out west? I'm forgetting. I don't think that there is.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. All right, we'll table that for now. Two things. One, in reference to the defense, I thought of you a couple of days ago when JB Bickerstaff said, not about his starting center, but about his backup center, Beef Stew, that he thought he was the – I forget what his word, but basically he's like he's the best defensive player in the league, and it's like not close or whatever he said.
Yeah.
You've been on that train for a couple of years that he does not get the respect that he deserves. So shout out to Beef Stew, not an all-star this year, but still having a very good year. And then
having an awesome year.
It's having an awesome year. I mean, the Pistons are awesome. Second thing is, does the fat, like Durin coming up, there was always talk about that he also gives you a little playmaking from the center spot. Does it concern you at all that he's averaging under two assists, or that's just kind of a function of like he gets the ball and it's the best, the most efficient shot is the shot that he could take because he's right under the basket?
Yeah, I mean, it's that. It's also the fact that the Pistons spacing is completely messed up because they don't have shooting. Like if Durin played on a team where he had four shooters around him, I bet you that number would be way higher. He'd have way more space to operate down low. He'd have more guys. It's not just the guys who he's kicking out to hit shots and get him assists. It's also that like defenses can collapse in on him because they're not worried about these shooters. Like the Pistons will play guys like, they're playing him next to Isaiah Stewart to get Isaiah Stewart more minutes. And Isaiah Stewart is taking some threes again this year, and he's hitting them when he takes them, but he's not a guy who defenses really guard. Asar Thompson is not a guy who defenses really guard. Cade Cunningham is not shooting the ball well this year, which is honestly not something I care about when I evaluate Cade, because part of the reason that Cade isn't shooting well is because he has no other shooters around him, like at all. And so like, Ron Holland isn't shooting the ball.
No.
They just don't have guys who are shooting and spacing the floor with any sort of capacity, which is why, even though they have the best record in the East, I don't have them winning the East right now. The team is really good, but I just don't think they have enough shooting in order to kind of put them over the finish line in terms of getting to the finals. But that I think is more of a reflection on that. Durin's also still like really young.
Yeah. No, and he entered the league like he was the youngest player in the league, I think, when he got drafted, or second youngest or something. Before we move on and debate the rest of the players, were you I forget who were, I think Stein or Jake Fisher, one of those guys, reported it this week that like there's some murmurs that the Pistons might want to stand pat. Would that surprise you if they did decide to go that route this year?
There is no route the Pistons could take that would surprise me.
Great answer. Okay.
Like, I think they're right in that sweet spot right now where they're trying to feel out how good this roster is. And I think they want to figure out exactly how good this roster is before they do anything wild. Now, something, they have good young players.
Including two that need to get paid this summer, one of which we have not talked about yet in Jaden Ivey.
Yes, and they have draft picks. And so something they are really excited about that can help them in the present and in the long term comes up, they're going to have the conversation. Yeah. And if they feel like it's an amazing deal, maybe they pull the trigger. But I think right now what they're trying to do is they're trying to be like, okay, so we have the number one record in the Eastern Conference.
Yep.
Are we really this good, or is our just like future really bright and we're good and we're like a second round out? And if that's true, then do we spend to upgrade on this team now? Do we wait to the summer? Do we wait till next year? Do we want to disrupt this chemistry? Do we want to see how this team plays out and just like let them, give them a playoff run, see if they can do it? And if they lose, then like we have an idea. And if they don't, then we don't. There are a lot of young teams that want to play it out that way. And I think they're still in that evaluative period, and maybe something comes up before February. But I could see it going the other way too. Like I think right now the position the Pistons are in is if you call them, they're going to pick up the phone. They're going to have a conversation. Okay. But I don't think they're having these sort of aggressive, like, oh, we need to upgrade conversations. And I also don't think they're having these sort of aggressive, like, nope, we love this team. Let's see what it has. We're standing pat. I think they're very much in an evaluative mode right now, heading into December 15th.
That's probably smart. I dig it. Okay. I'm just going to read you the list of names that I had under consideration for the final, my final three spots. I did not mention Cat. You did mention Cat. In no particular, actually, no, in order of where their teams are in the standings. Carl Anthony Towns. I wrote down OG Anunoby, and then I remembered OG Anunoby played 15 games, so I crossed him off. Mikal Bridges, your favorite player in the league, Josh Hart, Scottie Barnes, Evan Mobley, Norm Powell, Bam Adebayo, Josh Giddey, man, I would have guessed him to be a lock 3 weeks ago, and now he's here. And then, out of respect, I would try to do a better impersonation of Henry Hill and Goodfellas, but I can't. Pascal Siakam, because the dude is having a fucking unbelievable season. Did your final two All-Stars, well, Cat, obviously, you picked. Did your final two All-Stars come from that list?
They did. I had a couple others on my bubble.
Okay. Who? You give me the bubble names that you had.
Evan Mobley was on my bubble.
Did I not say Evan Mobley?
Oh, maybe I have Mobley
written down here. Yeah.
I don't listen to your podcast. You might have said it, but I don't listen. And on my bubble, you know who I put on my bubble? Because the bubble is inconsequential and I could just throw it on the bubble.
Oh no, you're not going to, you don't do anything. You don't do anything willy nilly, you know, even if you do try to have your cake and eat it too sometimes. Let me see if I could guess. Is the other bubble player?
There are two other bubble players I have.
Are they on a top 10 team in the East?
One of them, they're both on teams in the bottom half of the league. One of them's on like a good bottom half of the league team. And the other is on a
horrendous. Oh, Ryan Rollins?
No.
A good bottom half. You didn't have Michael Porter Jr.
I had Michael Porter Jr.
Oh, come on. Get the fuck out.
Because you could just throw him on your bubble. It's a bubble. It's a bubble. What's it going to do? Pop?
I know what a bubble is. Thank you. All right.
What's it going to do? Pop? Michael Porter Jr. is averaging 25 a game.
You know what? Actually, if you throw Michael Porter Jr. on the bubble, it might actually pop.
45 a game on amazing shooting. He's scoring the hell out of the ball. He's winning the Nets some games. Michael Porter Jr. has been really good. I just wanted to give him – I'm not putting him on the All-Star team.
No,
I
know.
On the All-Star team. I just want Michael Porter Jr. to get some bubble recognition. You know? Yeah,
he's
– The only person giving Michael Porter Jr. recognition right now is the Michael Porter Jr. show. So I think somebody else needs to give him some props for how well he has played this year. And then I had one more other bubble guy who is a completely different kind of player than Michael Porter Jr., but I think has been an amazing, amazing addition to his team this season and is not talked about enough.
An amazing addition to his team this season. Oh, I almost wrote it. It's funny. Me and Theo, I think if it's the player I'm thinking of, we're just talking about him before. Is it Nikhil?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Alexander Walker.
I almost wrote him down.
Who's been incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting him on my All-Star team. Just wanted him on that bubble. If it pops, it pops. He's been shooting the absolute hell out of the ball.
Yes, he has.
He has been really good defensively. He is just a really good player. He's averaging like 20 a game now.
Yep.
He is a really, really good player. That's all.
No.
Should I tell you who my actual guys were?
Can I guess?
You can guess.
I think your actual two guys were... I think it's two of Bam, Norm, Mobley, and Barnes. Am I correct?
You are correct.
And I think you went with... The first name I want to, the two names I want to say are Barnes and Powell, and yet I'm doubting myself. Did you go with Barnes?
Yes.
Okay. So that was my first gut, and that means I'm down to Mobley, Powell, and Bam. You just did this big story on the Heat, but you're an impartial observer. I don't know. I would be throwing a dart. Who was it? Who's your last guy?
Norm Powell.
It is Powell. Okay.
Norm Powell. That's Norm Powell has been amazing this year. He's been awesome. He's impressed me so much. Last year when he was in LA, I remember going to him at the end of the year because I did a story on at the end of the year. I think I'll do the same thing again this year. I did the almost improved team.
That's great. Yeah.
And I wanted to head it with Norm Powell because Norm Powell was not eligible for most improved player. And I was a voter. He was not eligible for most improved player because he didn't play 65 games. And I don't think that award should have a 65 game rule.
What is the purpose? If you are so much better from one year to the next in 55 games where you where the voters are looking like, wow, even in 55 games, he's the most improved, then that should even be more for your case.
Well, you have to remember the intent of the voting of the rule is not to legitimize the voting. The intent of the rule is to get guys to play games.
Yes.
And if guys are eliminated from contention for that award because of that, then that's just looked at as collateral damage.
It's very stupid. Okay.
That's the way it is. But however, I understand the intent of the rule for like all NBA, for MVP, that kind of stuff. I don't think anybody has ever been like, oh, I can't load manage. I might not win MIP. You know, that's the difference to me. Whereas why I'm like, I don't think you need 65 game rule for MIP. The same way you don't have 65 game rule for six man of the year. You know, like it's just you don't need it. So anyway, Norm Powell was not eligible. If he were eligible, I would have voted for him for most improved player last year. I thought he was awesome. The Clippers last year lost Paul George and Ty Lue. And I talked to Norm about this for my story last year at the end of the year, which is Ty Lue came up to Powell during training camp, like first day of training camp. And was like, are you good running around like a ton of screens? Because the way that Ty Lue's offenses always have some sort of movement shooter, just runs around a ton of pin downs to free himself for threes. And that was Paul George for a long time. And obviously that's one of Paul George's elite skills. And prime Paul George is about as good as anybody moving off the ball. Just a brilliant, brilliant off ball player. Right. And unbelievable catch and shoot guy, unbelievable cutter, all that stuff. And Powell, you know, is a good off ball guy, but he had never like played that George role to such a heavy degree. And I believe last year. And so Ty Lue comes to him and is like, can you run around like a ton of off ball screens? And Powell says he responded like, if it gets me the ball, I'll do whatever you want. And he's got this great sense of humor and he's a very smart, very smart basketball mind, Norm Powell. So he like got it. He bought in, he got it. And I believe last year, Norm Powell ran around more off ball screens per 100 possessions than any other player in the NBA. And what happens during the process? He has the best year of his career to that point. Shoots seven threes a game, shoots 42% from three, averages a career high in points.
Fringe all-star combo. Maybe more than the fringe all-star combo. He was in the all-star combo.
Real, like you could say all-star snub, one could say.
You could say that. You could say that.
Yeah. If he didn't necessarily like vehemently deserve it, like you could argue that he didn't deserve it. Like he was on the list. Like when you see like snubs at the bottom of the guys who didn't make it and you see the snub list, like he definitively had to be on the snub list.
Yeah.
Clippers fans were pissed that Norm Powell didn't make the All-Star game. You know, the Clippers didn't have an All-Star. Harden didn't make it and Powell didn't make it.
Something tells me they're more pissed this year, but continue.
Yeah. They're pissed about other things, I think. But Norm Powell had this amazing growth last year. And it kind of looked like, okay, well, this is definitely this is what a career year from a guy would look like. He's like 31 years old. He's made this leap. And I kind of thought that embodied most improved player. Then he goes to Miami. And now he's playing exactly the opposite. Miami doesn't set any screens. Norm Powell runs around no screens now. He has been better this year than he was last year. The numbers are better. The process is better. He's playing crazy fast, just like this entire Miami team is. Yep. He has been at the epicenter of their offensive uptick. Look, their offense is, compared to last year, a million times better. It's not like it's an unbelievable offense compared to the rest of the league, but it's an unbelievable offense compared to recent Heat history.
And oh,
the transformation is unbelievable. And Norm Powell is one of the guys who has really held them up. I don't know if there is, I'd like to find a way to track this. I don't know.
Well, you just invented a stat recently, so I'm sure you could find a way to do whatever it is you're going to suggest.
I don't know if there's a player in the league who actually creates more space on a step back than Norm Powell. Like, I don't know if there's a player in the league who has a longer step backwards on a step back jumper than Norm Powell does. His step backwards is so long and creates so much space when he rises. Shooting 43% from three on 7 threes a game, 25 a game, crazy efficiency, like 60% effective field goal percentage, like just crazy, crazy efficiency. Incredibly team-oriented basketball, too. He's not just taking the ball and going. Tons of this is off of cuts, off of cats and off of catches and shoots, off of movement. I just recorded an episode. Sorry.
Everybody go subscribe to Cats and Shoot on patreon.com. Continue.
What an arrogant prick.
No, man, you're an idiot. That's the thing. You're not arrogant.
Idiot for sure. Idiot for sure. My brain scrambled. I literally just recorded an episode because of, before this.
You're the best. I love you.
Norm Powell's been awesome. He's been awesome. Bam has had a great year too. I just feel like I can only take one Heat guy. And Bam's had some injuries. And Norm Powell has just been consistently great the entire year from game one till now. Props to Norm Powell. Very deserving. And Scotty Barnes has been really, really awesome this year. Great passing season from Scotty Barnes. Every time I tune in, I'm like, there's a couple plays a game where it's like another team plays crazy fast. And Scotty Barnes is just like, identifies a mismatch in terms of numbers and is like, I am going to go right into the teeth of the mismatch. And then I'm going to create to either a cutter or a shooter. Really, really good at that. Obviously having a fabulous defensive season, which has been really big for them. Raptors have really, really trailed off lately, but Barnes is a heck of a player.
Listen, credit to my favorite player ever, RJ Barrett. Like the loss of RJ has hurt them a lot. So
yeah. Oh, 100% because they have nobody else who gets to the rim.
No, they don't.
Like RJ is their guy who gets to the rim. They're constructed in somewhat of a fragile way, I think, as we've seen, where it's like they lost RJ and they lose their way to get to the rim and now they're in trouble. When they lose Ingram, they lose their ability to score out of the mid-range and then they're in trouble there because Ingram has been really good kind of creating these bailout shots late in the clock when they need them and they're in trouble in that way. Ingram, by the way, was on my bubble.
I was gonna write his name down as like, I should write his name down because that's the right thing to do. And I'm like, is there any universe where I would actually put Brandon Ingram on? Which is the reason why I didn't write. I thought about Michael Porter Jr. For as much shit that I gave you, I looked at the Nets and I was like, you know what? He's averaging a bunch of points. He's shooting pretty efficiently. And I'm like, is there any world where he would actually make my All-Star team unless I didn't write it down? I don't give out participation trophies, Fred. Not on the show, not on any show. But if you want to do that, that's fine.
I'm not giving out participation trophies. I'm just putting him on the bubble for a participation
trophy. You're showing love.
And then not giving him a participation trophy.
You're a lover, not a fighter. Two quick things, and we're short on time today, so we're going to finish up sooner. I joked before about how you put the death knell on Miami with your article. They have shot under 30% from three in three of their last four games, all of which have been losses. And the one game that they did not shoot under 30% from three was a one-point loss to the Magic, which was a very, very close game. They also had a three-point loss to the Pistons recently. So it's not like the Heat have suddenly forgotten how to, you know, play in this offense, despite what your guy, Norm Powell, said, I think after... Was it, did he say that after the Magic game? The teams are figuring us out or whatever it was?
Well, he said that to me when I spoke to him for that story.
Oh, did he?
In somewhat, no, I'm not saying that the quote that you saw was from my story.
Yeah, no. But he said something to that ilk.
We were talking about it. Let me find this. I'll tell you exactly what he said to me. I didn't include it in the story. I didn't think it was as relevant for the story. But Norm Powell is great to talk basketball with. And so we were just kind of, you know, shooting shooting the shit.
Shooting the cats.
And we were talking about like what works for them, what doesn't work for them. And I had commented to him, I was like, when you guys are good, you look so fluid. And he said, sometimes. And I said, okay, when do you not?
Interesting.
He said, I think we get bogged down when we get, and we get a little happy when we have some success with our offense early. And then we start trying to go one-on-one rather than sticking with it. Keeping those same principles, ball movement, body movement, cutting, putting defenses in rotation. We kind of get a little bit like I can attack. That's when our offense gets a little stagnant and we can get better with that.
It's a great call. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be a force in the East before all is said and done. I hope to go.
He's a very smart guy. He's very astute. He's good at knowing that kind of stuff and calling it out before other people see it.
I just want to say we haven't texted about this, but I will just share it with you now. I hope to good God that the Heat, that this Giannis Heat stuff is not real. Because
anyone to the Heat is always real.
Yes,
have you
I
been
know.
To my, have you been to Miami, John?
Been to Miami many times, Fred.
It is the most lovely place.
It is. It's perfect.
Like on the planet?
I've said this on the pod. My wife and I, we looked at houses in Palm Beach when we were visiting my mom like a year and a half ago. If it were up to me, we would be living there right now. But my wife was like, no, my family, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, all right, fine.
Miami specifically, I know for some people, Miami has the reputation of like, oh, it's South Beach with the parties and whatever else. And it's like, no, that's not, awesome. Miami is what LA purports to be.
That's a good take. It's a good thing.
Like Miami is gorgeous and relaxing and beautiful and fun with things to do and good restaurants and culture. And
I don't want to think about a world in which Giannis is in Miami. All right, let's finish up with a very quick cat discussion because I think we have the same 12. The reason why I didn't have Cat as a lock is probably obvious in that individually, his numbers are not where they usually are. And yet you look at his impact, as I know you do because you watch every Knick game, his impact on the team, his impact on the offense. And like, I know Benji, and I have not gotten a chance to read it yet. Bad job by me. On Knicks Film School's Patreon, just had an article about Cat's defensive impact. And like, his defense has been better this year than, I don't know, maybe ever. It's been solid. Like, the bad stuff is like it is very obvious because anything Cat does that's bad is like much louder than anybody else is bad, but it's been mostly good. Just talk to me for a minute on Cat. Why was he an all-star for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't feel like Cat has had a good year by his standards at all, right?
Yes.
I mean, you look at what you expect out of Karl Anthony Towns, and it's just not there. He's looked uncomfortable at various times throughout the year in the offense. He's shooting a lower percentage on twos than he has at any point in his career. He's shooting a way lower than his career percentage on threes. I think it's his lowest percentage on threes since his rookie season when he didn't really take threes. It's his least efficient scoring season across the board of his entire career. And yet his entire career is so freaking good that I still think he's kind of a surefire all-star. He's 22 and 12 right now. It's not like the numbers are bad. He's a 52% effective field goal percentage, which is not where you want it if you're Cat, and it's not near his career number. And I anticipate that number is going to come up. And a lot of it is because of a super slow start, especially with his jump shot. And he's still just like the spacing that he provides. People are horrified of his jumper. He has done a good job being more aggressive, looking for his own 3-point shot of late. He has been one of the best rebounders in the NBA. Full stop.
100%.
Unbelievable rebounding season. The Knicks are, I just did a big story on rebounding earlier this week. And I didn't mention Cat because I led it talking about the Knicks. I didn't mention Cat. I didn't mention any Knicks players. Because it was really more about the strategy behind rebounding. And it was honestly almost more about the coaches.
I was about to say, you wrote a lot about a Knicks coach for any Knicks fans who may not have seen the story yet. You lead the story with Mike Brown, and there's a lot of Mike Brown in the story.
Mm-hmm. which is funny because I didn't actually quote Mike Brown for the story.
That is funny. But
I felt weird not like I asked Mike Brown about stuff for the story. I didn't quote him. Sometimes I feel it's a weird writer brand thing where you feel like if you talk to someone, you have to quote them. And one of the things that like good advice for anybody who wants to do my job, or if you aspire to be a sports writer or any kind of journalist, actually, when you talk to somebody, you always feel like, oh, I spoke to them. I have to put a quote in there, if only to show that I spoke to them, or you feel like you have to take something away from the interview. But really, all you should be trying to get during an interview is information, not quotes. And if you get the information, you could say it well yourself. Don't bog yourself down with quotes. Just write it as is, and don't feel like you need to put in the quote. Don't feel like you need to. It can make for better, and it's weird. It feels weird when you're writing it, but it reads better to someone who isn't involved in the process with you. And it's a very difficult thing to get rid of. Anyway, moving on. Totally irrelevant.
No, but it's very irrelevant.
I didn't talk about Cat in that story because I didn't talk about any players. But one of the reasons that the Knicks are one of the best two-way rebounding teams in the league is because of Cat. And I think he's been very good on the offensive boards. However, I think he's been amazing on the defensive boards. His physicality comes through as a defensive rebounder, like it does no other element of his game. Oh. He has been in a league now where guys are crashing the glass, like I had in that story, more than they ever have. Cat is doing this amazing job. He's a really amazing box out guy. Like he's doing an amazing job just like keeping multiple opponents off the glass. And he's not always the one to get the rebound. Normally the guys who rebound the way that he does in terms of like, I'm going to box you out and I'm going to move you. Normally the guys who rebound that way don't have amazing individual rebound numbers. They're still great rebounders, but like Brooke Lopez was a great example of this, right? Like he would clear guys out and somebody else swoops in and just gets an open uncontested rebound. But Brooke Lopez did all the work and he averages like, you know, 7 rebounds a game or something like that. Cat's doing that and he's averaging 12.
So real quick, everybody loves to talk about Mitchell Robinson's rebounding, right? Opponents are actually grabbing more offensive rebounds against the Knicks when Mitchell Robinson is on the court than when he is off. We're not going to talk about Mitch right now. Teams are grabbing 4.1% fewer, according to Cleaning Glass, offensive rebounds when Cat is on the court than when he is off. That is an 87th percentile number, which is elite.
He's been excellent on the defensive boards. It's a huge part of it. And like, yeah, like if you compare, if you did like each Cat season as if it were his own player and you were like, half of these can be all-stars, half can't, you wouldn't say this one was an all-star. The reality is the guy's just a perennial all-star guy. I mean, like I could never put Brandon Ingram on this list over Cat.
Or Josh. No, Peter, I think
he's a lock. Like he's a lock to be on this list.
The name that is, well, should be glaring if you're a Cavs fan, is that's not on either of our teams is Evan Mobley. And yet I don't know how you're supposed to look at the Cavs this year. And again, you did a feature length story on the Cavs, which was excellent. How do you look at the Cavs this year and look at Evan Mobley individually and be like, that guy's an all-star? I just don't know. I just don't think you do it.
Yeah, he's on the fence. I wouldn't put him in over Cat. I would have put him in over like Scotty Barnes was my last guy on. If I were going to do, I thought long and hard about Mobley. Something's up with Cleveland, man.
You spent a week with them, didn't you? Or several days or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, and something's up with that was early. That was early. Like something
was like a month ago.
Which was early. It was
Yeah.
It was more than a month ago. It was like late October.
Maybe that's right. Yes. November. You're right.
The story came out like a week later. That's why.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
But I was with them, you know, early. And they had all said to me, like everyone there warned me, like, this is not going to be like last year where, you know, the team wins 64 games.
You said that again.
reels off victory after victory in the regular season. And my follow-up question to that pretty consistently was like, okay, but I didn't feel like you guys gunned for regular season wins. Like you were notoriously playing your guys like 30 minutes and less. Like you weren't playing your guys a lot of minutes. And they were like, yeah, but there was like a culture of like, we're going to gun for regular season wins. And this year it's like, that's just not the way. We're going to experiment schematically more, experiment strategically more, all that kind of stuff.
Does that explain their record, though, and like how they've looked at some of these games?
Not even close.
No.
No, not even close. And I kind of accepted that. But this isn't that.
No.
This isn't that. They have been strange. Their offense being 10th in points per possession after they were number one last year, a little strange. Darius Garland not being there has been...
Yeah.
I voted for him for All-NBA last year, which I got some
flack. Did you really?
For. Yeah.
You had to be among a small number of voters who gave... I'm going to look it up right now.
He didn't make it. I don't know
how. No, I know he didn't make it, but I'm going to look up how many other people, because you could. This is publicly available information, Fred. I don't know if you realize that.
Yes, it is. I put him third team All NBA last year, and I did it over James Harden and Tyrese Halliburton. And Halliburton was my first guy off. Harden was my second guy off. And I actually got some flack from people on the Harden side for doing that. And their argument was, you know, Harden's, you know, on a really good team too. The Clippers won 50 and they didn't have Kawhi the whole year. Paul George left. Like, James Harden carried the entire burden of facilitating. And look at what happened with this team, with James Harden carrying the entire burden of everything they had to do offensively. And my argument was, people talk about the Cavs offense like it's Donovan Mitchell's. And I agree, Donovan Mitchell is the best player on the Cavs. And that's why I had Donovan Mitchell, I think, second team All-NBA last year.
He made first team, yeah.
Yeah, I think I had him second. Maybe I had him first. I don't remember. No, I think I had him second. Maybe I had him first.
Do you remember, by the way, if you had Garland second or third team?
I think I had Garland third.
Okay, he received one second team vote, and then you were one of three people to vote him third team.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Stand proud on that vote, Fred.
Well, I do feel good about that vote because my reasoning was, all right, well, this entire thing is constructed around Darius Garland, though. It's not constructed around Donovan Mitchell. And part of that is because Donovan Mitchell is such an unselfish teammate that he's allowed it to be not constructed around him. And he legitimately sacrificed a ton last year in terms of his personal production in order to make sure the Cavs were as good of a team as they could possibly be. But Darius Garland last year ran more pick and rolls than anybody else on that team. Darius Garland last year was the leading facilitator on that team. Darius Garland last year created more threes than anybody on that team. Darius Garland last year handled more isolations than anyone on that team. Darius Garland last year brought the ball up in transition more than anybody else on that team. Darius Garland facilitated everything. He's responsible. They were an elite three-point shooting team. Well, who creates more corner threes than anybody else on that team? By far, it's Darius Garland. He's the guy who gets their deep. He created more deep paint touches than anybody on that team. Like, he was the guy who created everything. So from my mind, Darius Garland was the dude who ran the offense that was the best offense in the league by a pretty good margin. And he was the one who was like the skeleton. Maybe Donovan Mitchell was the heart of the offense, but he was the skeleton. And that counted as something. He was the dude who made it so the whole thing didn't just plop in on itself.
I dig it.
And Garland has either been hurt and out this year.
Well,
or hurt, not himself.
He's played real quick. He's played 9 games. He's only playing 28 minutes a game. He's averaging 14 points and effective field goal percentage of 43. So,
And he's just been not even close to himself. And we've seen what the Cavs look like without Darius Garland. And it's like, what is going on with this team? But there's also weird. They're just a weird watch. Mobley, yeah. I just feel like, I don't know. How do I put this? I'm normally specific in the things that I feel like I'm seeing out of players or not seeing out of players or want to see out of players or don't want to see out of players or whatever else. When I watch Mobley this year, I'm like, I can't put my finger on it, but I want something more offensively. I can't put my finger on it.
To be talking head guy, is it possible he just isn't that guy? He seems like he wants to be that guy. It's possible. I mean, he's just still that guy.
He's still young.
Okay, that's fine. He was second team All NBA last year. Like I'm the one who always says development's not linear. And that even goes for like when you reach almost the pinnacle of your sport, which like if you're second team all NBA, you're pretty damn close. I don't know. But they're not the same team.
I mean, offensively, it's extremely possible that he's not just like Anthony Davis offensively.
Yeah.
That's I'm going to say that's likely that he's not Anthony Davis offensively. If he were Anthony Davis offensively, he'd be Anthony Davis right now.
That's yeah.
But could he be a level below that? Yeah, I'm not writing that off completely.
Well,
could he like a better passer and facilitator than an Anthony Davis type, even if he's not the down low scorer?
That probably lower. Well, I don't know. We'll see what happens with Garland, but that probably lowers the ceiling of because everybody who were like the Cavs could actually make a run at the championship, I think, was building in like Evan Mobley is going to be at least the co-best player on the team, if not outright the best player on the team. And if Evan Mobley is only the sort, not I say only in quotes, like in the context of this conversation, only the sort of player that you're suggesting that is what he might be, then that probably lowers the ceiling of the team. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, there's another part of this too, which is that they're playing Mobley and Allen less and less together.
It's been glaring when you look at, and the number last I checked was like a week and a half ago, the numbers with them on the court were very good, but you know, I don't watch them enough to know what that means or doesn't mean.
Yeah. I mean, right now those guys are only overlapping for about 15 minutes a game.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
And last year was like part of the thing was like, oh, they figured out how to play Mobley and Allen together. And some of the stuff that made it viable, they're not doing as often, you know, the stuff with like Allen in the corner, and those types of cuts, which kind of open things up. They're not doing that as often. But yeah, I mean, look, you can talk about Garland being hurt, talk about Max Strus being hurt.
Hunter's been in and out.
But everyone's hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole league, you know who's had tons of injuries?
The Thunder.
The Thunder haven't had Jalen Williams for like basically the whole season. Hartenstein.
How many games has Alex Caruso played? I looked this up. I thought it was a misprint the other day. Like
15. 15, maybe.
Is that? I thought it was even less, but yeah, you're probably right.
Did you know when Alex Caruso was on the court, the Thunder are outscoring opponents 16. By 30 points per 100 possessions?
I actually did know that because I was looking up the on-off stats the other day. And it's just because I was doing for West All-Stars. I was like, let me look at the on-offs and sort it, just look at the West players. And I looked at that. And I'm like, this is.
During their current 16 game winning streak, the Thunder's net rating is 20.3.
After I said all this stuff about it, this is going to be a shorter episode than usual. I've now stayed a half an hour longer than intended. This is the last thing I'm going to say, and then we got to get out of here. And I'll give you a chance to make fun of me before we leave. Ben Kim Gervey, who's a great Knicks Film School supporter, asked me in a Patreon mailbag a couple of weeks ago, with it, you have to stay under the second apron and don't worry about your last four roster spots, but what's your perfect 10-man team that you would try to assemble around Jalen Brunson? That was the caveat. So Brunson's on the team, and then just fill out the rest of the roster. And you can't have rookie contract guys either. So no Wemby, no... I think J-Dub's still technically on a rookie contract, Chet, too. So, you know, I went Jokic and I did like some other things. And then I ended up including Caruso and Dort on the team because they both make... what's Caruso's 18. I think Dort might be 18, too. And it's like, if you're trying to assemble a perfect basketball team, why wouldn't you want either of those guys on it? Like, what do they take off the table versus what they put on the table? It's insane.
Yep. Yep. I mean, you could just take the whole Thunder team. I guess Cason Wallace is on a rookie deal.
Yeah. So, you can't have Wallace. You can't have their second.
Yeah.
Their
I mean, look, players. You can have Aaron Wiggins coming off your bench. Who's on a 5-year, $47 million contract.
I thought about Isaiah Wiggins. Thought about Wiggins, thought about Joe. I was trying to skew more defense heavy because the assignment.
Wiggins is a good defender.
Yeah, but he's not. I was like looking for like if you're because I had Jokic
for Caruso level. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like if I'm going to have Jokic and Brunson as my two best players, everybody else on the team, I want it to be like it. Like, for instance, I thought about Ryan Rollins because he's making $4 million a year, which might be the best bargain in the league right now. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather pay a little bit more. The only vanity pick that I allowed myself was I did put DiVincenzo on the team. It's $11 million.
Very good value contract. He's having another really good year.
He is
trying to fight everybody around him.
Leon, bring him home like the Martian. Bring him home, Fred. Get us out of here. What should people look out for you? Where can they find you?
As we talked about, I had a story out on offensive rebounding this week, which is, I promise, more exciting than it sounds.
It's so good. It's so when every NBA person, media person, you've gotten like. People who have been like the people that have come out of the woodwork to praise the story is how you know if you're going to read one story that has been written in the last 3 months about the NBA, read Fred Katz's offensive rebounding story. None of that is hyperbole. It's the best story that has been written in the NBA this year. Full stop. You loved it when you told me about it before it came out, and you were like, "I really like this story." And I'm like, "Okay."
I appreciate it. Yeah, I was excited about it. I worked on it for a really long time and spent a while compiling the quotes and just talking to people in the league about it. And it's about this, you know, it's not as much about offensive rebounding to me as it is about a statistical revolution. Yeah. And honestly about all of these people who are experts in something admitting that they were totally wrong about something that they were so sure they were right about. and then completely unstubbornly going the other way because mm-hmm. the numbers are telling them to. And I think it's a very interesting trend. And I have a lot of human stories in there, or at least I attempted to have a lot of human stories in there about the coaches and some players. I was like, I have to talk to Steven Adams for this.
I was about to say the personal favorite quote in the story, and you did use this quote, was the Adams quote, and he's basically like, yeah, I don't know anybody in this nonsense, but you have to read this story. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, another good rule for NBA journalism is when you can talk to Steven Adams for a story. Talk to Steven Adams for the story. I literally was like, I'm doing a story on offensive rebounding. I have to have a section on Houston because they have this, historically great offensive rebounding team. And I literally flew to meet the Rockets on the road.
Oh, that's cool.
So just so I could talk to Steven Adams for the story. I flew into Cleveland. They were playing in Cleveland a few weeks ago and I flew into Cleveland, got Steven Adams at shoot around and went home. And
the Ime stuff, you got was good too.
Ime was so much more open about it than I kind of anticipated that
he seems like a pretty open guy.
Yeah, but it's just, how every coach has a varying degree of not wanting to talk about this stuff because they're so paranoid about giving away strategy and tournament metrics and all that kind of stuff. And they don't want people to know. And so often when I ask these kinds of questions and they're people who I don't necessarily know as well, like I never covered Ime or anything like that. Like people tend to be somewhat guarded. And I was honestly surprised by like these coaches who are kind of known as being tougher. You know, like Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Mazzulla was as open as he was.
Baz was good in the story too.
He was really good. Yeah, he was really, really good. His answers were very helpful and really enlightening. I learned a lot. Like Mazzulla is obviously a brilliant guy and what a job he's done this year. Like he's on the coach of the year shortlist.
I was right about now. To say the coach of the year conversation when we get to that is going to be dicey. Okay. We got to go. What else? So the rebounding story.
Yeah. I got the rebounding story. I have my weekly notebook. If you're a Knicks fan listening to this, I have a Josh Hart note in my Josh Hart item in my weekly notebook for Friday morning. Check that out on The Athletic.
And then Cats and Shoot. Who'd you have on? Who's the episode with today?
One Benji Ritholtz.
Who?
Benji Ritholtz.
He's good. He is an NBA person.
Yeah, he's a Knicks guy. He's the best guy at Knicks film school.
Listen, man, I wouldn't even pretend to take that as an insult. Not even.
Yeah. So you can go as loud. I do it on Patreon, patreon.com/catsandshoot. And you can go check that out. Benji, unsurprisingly, was fantastic on the pod. We had a great convo. So check that out too.
Listen, everybody out there listening, watching, consume all this Fred Katz content while you can, because pretty soon, I don't know.
I'm not going to die.
No, I'm trying to think.
You're going to say that like I was going to die. Assume, consume this while you can, because pretty soon that guy might keel over. He looks
someone. No, I was gonna, someone's going to like, I don't know, some like billionaire is going to scoop you up to just write privately about the league for him and him only, or her.
You know what? That sounds. I don't even know why that sounds problematic, but it sounds incredibly. That sounds like an offer I absolutely have to.
If someone is going to offer you $1 million a year to write about and cover the NBA, but only for them,
but write privately is just like, I don't know. I'd be like, this is pretty creepy. It is pretty creepy. Also, John, you don't know how big my ego is. I need people reading me. I need that dopamine rush. Of like,
it's absolutely. How that hat that you're wearing fits on your head. you are still the most ridiculous person that I ever have to talk to on any microphone. It's not close. And yet all these fucking coaches and players and people talk to you. Why? I just don't know.
I don't know. I've said to many of them on many occasions that my job is essentially just being a socially acceptable stalker. Well, so
you're good at it.
I think I just bother them until they talk to me.
No, you're very good at what you do. All kidding aside, everybody, if anybody out there is listening that has missed any of these stories, that isn't subscribed to The Athletic, you'll get your money's worth just reading Fred alone. And they also have all kinds of other people who write about the NBA, other sports. So lots of great stuff. Fred, I will text you in a bit. I'm going to sign us off though. Thank you everybody for listening to another episode. I was about to say of Cats and Shoot of NBA Takedown. Make sure you subscribe, make sure you follow, make sure you rate, review, do all the things that you do to support your favorite content. We are a growing show channel, the whole thing. We're pretty close to 2,000 YouTube subs. So help us get over that threshold. That would be cool. And we'll be back with another episode on Monday. We will talk to you all then. For Fred Katz and my guy Theo, we will talk to you later. Peace out.